KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Dave Iverson. In this hour of Forum, the tsunami of cash flowing into the presidential campaign of Barack Obama. 3 million people have given the Democratic nominee more than $600 million, and that doesn't even count October. Meanwhile, John McCain accepted federal funding, and he's limping along with far fewer donors and much less money than Obama. Is it the death knell for public financing of campaigns? And does it really matter? How might it affect elections down the road, the kinds of people who might run for office? And how could it change the way Obama or McCain governs as president? We'll take your phone calls and email, and we'll get started with Forum right after this. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Dave Iverson. Well, just 11 days until the presidential election now, and already Barack Obama has surpassed even the wildest expectations for fundraising. Obama opted out of public financing for his campaign, while John McCain stuck with a pledge to take federal money. The results are stunning. Obama has raised more than $600 million, including $150 million in September alone. Some 3 million people have given to his campaign, much of it over the Internet. McCain, on the other hand, kept his pledge to take federal financing and is limited to $84 million, plus whatever the Republican National Committee can raise to help him before the election. It all leaves many people wondering if public funding for presidential campaigns is dead. Joining us to talk about money in politics are Bob Stern, president of the Center for Governmental Studies in Los Angeles. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Scott. Nice to be with you.
Also in Los Angeles, Roz Wyman, a longtime Democratic Party activist and a delegate and fundraiser for Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. Good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us from Washington, Sheila Krumholtz, executive director for the Center for Responsive Politics. They track and analyze federal campaign contributions. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And also with us here in the studio, Jim Sutton, attorney specializing in election law and litigation. Let me begin with you, Sheila Krumholtz. Other than the sheer size and quantity of Obama's contributions, what stands out for you in this presidential campaign?
Well, what stands out is the overall sums that we're talking about. This is the first time we'll have crossed the $5 billion threshold, we predict. And I think our $5.3 billion estimate, to be exact, is very conservative. It may well go over that.
And in terms of where the money's coming from, I know that you folks analyze in terms of the sectors of the economy and how people in different industries give to different candidates. Between Obama and McCain, what are you seeing?
Well, fire, finance, insurance, and real estate is still the biggest campaign contributor, bar none, to overall in political contributions at the federal level, and it's still number one for both McCain and Obama as well. When you break it down into more specific industries, it is still critical to both, but lawyers and lobbyists are also, and not lobbyists in the case of Obama, but lawyers and law firms are, in fact, Obama's number one industry, followed by retired and education. Hmm. Education is really an unusual factor in this cycle. It's really grown to be a big source of campaign cash.
And is the distribution between Republican and Democrat different than you've seen in past years in terms of the sectors?
Overall, we predict that there's going to be about a 60-40 split favoring the Democrats. That follows because money follows power. And so that is not all that unusual. And I think it's especially understandable given the vacuum that the Obama campaign has become. They have raised so much money. So naturally, the Democrats are going to do better.
Does it surprise you at all that given what's happening with the economy, and the fact that so many people are feeling less wealthy, that there is so much money going into the campaign nonetheless?
You know, I think for the vast majority of donors that are giving contributions of the size that we can examine, those contributions of more than $200, this is a cost of doing business. These people are executives. They're vice presidents and partners and CEOs and titans of industry. They are not your rank-and-file American Joe the plumber. And they view these contributions as being a small cost to pay in order to gain access to plead your case to Washington, which has jurisdiction over your industry.
Now, you point out that you only track contributions 200 and larger. Obama, about a quarter of his money is coming from donations that are smaller than that. And so you just they don't have to be reported, or is it just the ones under 100 that don't have to be reported?
The threshold is $201. At the point at which somebody gives more than $200, their contributions have to be itemized and included in the Federal Election Master database. Any donor that has given $10 a month will start to be reported at the point at which they're giving more than $200. And so even those small donations will go into the electronic filing by the candidates or by any federal committee once the donor has aggregated to more than $200.
Roz Wyman, you've been raising money for candidates, including yourself, going back many years, and most recently for Hillary Clinton. What was it like going up against that Obama fundraising machine? Not that Hillary Clinton was a piker when it came to fundraising.
Well, it obviously was difficult in the sense that he was just seemed to be bringing it in and bundles of it at a time. We've not seen anything, of course, like this in my time in politics, and the first time I can ever remember the Democrats having enough money to really run a campaign. We always follow the Republicans. And the Internet has had such an absolute influence on this fundraising as something, again, you know, if you start back in the 50s when I did, you know, we had nothing like that or even close to it. So it's a phenomena, and it's just remarkable to me who is, you know, saw the jumps from, you know, $100 to $1,000 dinner, and then you went up and up and up, and, you know, now you've got events that are $28,500.
What do you think donors want for their money?
Well, I think a lot of them, you know, you can point to lobbyists and you can point to the big law firms and et cetera, and they have an interest in obviously what goes on in government. But, you know, the masses really just want to be a part of it. And we always feel if you can get a dollar from somebody, they feel that they're, you know, a part of your campaign. And so the masses out there, you know, it might be a school teacher or it might be a, you know, a worker of some sort. I didn't hear mentioned labor, by the way, from the first speaker. But, you know, they have interest. But again, I think that the interest in Obama has just been so incredible with the enthusiasm. I mean, we even see young people who never give a dime giving a few bucks this time. So I really think the masses do not have a vested interest. They just really want to see him elected.
How has the way in which you go about fundraising changed, Roz Wyman, over the years? You know, is it, do you have to lavish much more attention on someone to get a larger donation or not?
Well, you know, in my days, you know, it's always a dinner, a big dinner. And they certainly had some of those, or a big concert as the years rolled on. And this year, of course, they had some big events in, you know, New York, and they've had some big concerts, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of that hasn't changed. But, you know, in my day, you had to get on the phone, and you had to work it. I mean, you had to call everybody. You know, you did a mailer, but the mailer used to bring you in next to nothing, and you just had to go name by name by name. And we always say, how do we increase this list, you know? And that was the biggest problems. But I must say the dinners still seem to work, even though the overhead sometimes, I hate to see what we have to spend. And, you know, in the past I've done some very cheap dinners where we use butcher paper instead of tablecloths and, you know, don't put flowers and, you know, some of the things to try to cut costs. But, you know, when you just get a check direct, your net is very good.
Bob Stern, one of the great things about the Internet from a campaign perspective is it's very low cost, isn't it?
Yes, it's very low cost, and Obama certainly has taken advantage of it. But I have to say that Obama is the first presidential candidate in a general election to turn down the public financing since it went into effect in 1976. And he did break his word on this. He did promise that he would take the public financing in the general election. So I think the Democrats are going to rue his decision, because I think they will not be able to match in the future what he's done. I mean, he may win, and everybody will be very happy on the Democratic side, but just like the Democrats rued the fact that they didn't change campaign finance laws when they were in power in Congress in the early 90s, they're going to rue his decision this year.
So you think the system is dead?
I think decisions on life support, just about dead, yes. Now, it's possible, and he has actually sponsored legislation to amend the law, and it's possible that Congress will do something, but my sense is probably they won't, and probably this is the last time we'll see public financing of campaigns. And I give McCain credit for sticking to it. I think McCain could have raised, particularly Sarah Palin, could have raised far more than the $84 million he's getting in public financing. And so I give McCain credit for staying by his word, and I criticize Obama for having gone back on what he promised to do.
Although he would say he was a little more nuanced in that, but basically you're right. He did break the pledge. Jim Sutton, there's always, for so many years now, there have been efforts to restrict money in politics, and it's kind of like blocking a river. You know, it just, the water finds a way to keep going upstream. Why is it so hard?
It's so hard because, as other speakers have said, people want to be part of it. But I think more fundamentally, because people in America want to see certain types of people get elected. They want to see, when their neighbor runs for office, they want that person elected. If they're pro-choice, they want women pro-choice candidates elected. And my response would be, so what? What is the downside of more money going to candidates? All more money means is more ability of the candidates to get their message out, more ability of the candidates to go more places. Bob Stern criticizing Obama for not taking public financing and kind of bemoaning perhaps the death of the public financing system for presidential candidates. Well, the previous speaker, Roz, was talking about how great it is that all the masses, all the regular people are now giving to Obama. And I think we should focus on that a lot of people involved, a lot of people writing checks is a good thing, just gets more information out there for the voters.
Roz Wyman, I know you need to leave shortly, but before you go, I want to ask you, you've worked for a lot of women candidates. Is fundraising different for women, and what have women learned, do you think, as fundraisers in this election cycle?
Well, women have really grown in politics, period. When I first started out, I mean, if you went to get a $10 contribution from a woman and she happened to be married, she'd say, oh, I can't write that check. I have to ask my husband. And thank God we've passed that. But it's very hard in a way to get a woman to write a big check. It's much easier to raise the money from the men. And I've learned that. But women candidates have come a long way. And I mean, for example, Speaker Pelosi, you know, spends a lot of time fundraising. And she's found that, you know, we can put together a group of women running. And in fact, I did a fundraiser in my backyard we raised $500,000, but we directed it directly to women candidates. And we had a slam dunk event. So, you know, we have seen a change. But, boy, when I started, it was really difficult. I'd like to add one other thing that was said, talking about Obama, you know, not keeping his word. I really think that what happened then is McCain was not sure what he could raise. And, therefore, that's why they didn't take public financing. And that's the only reason, and I think he's kicking himself all over the country, the fact that he took it, because the Republicans still can raise money, and they can raise a lot of money. But what we are seeing this time, 527s are not coming in with the money for the Republicans as they did against John Kerry. And that's an interesting phenomenon, because we were convinced that the 570s would kill us again.
Do you agree with Bob Stern that Democrats are going to rue the day that they helped kill the current system of public financing?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But as I say, I've been in politics 60 years, and I've never seen us have enough money to run a campaign. And I mean, Obama's going and able to go into states and that we never dreamed of going in and putting offices together, 30 offices, 40 offices, 50 offices in the state. And so I don't know, and it may well be. But having raised money my whole life in politics, in a way, I would love to see those rules adopted by Congress, because in the long run, I do still think it's healthy.
All right, Roswell, I know you need to go. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. We're talking about campaign financing and all the money flowing into the presidential campaign this year. Bob Stern, president of the Center for Governmental Studies in Los Angeles, is with us, along with Jim Sutton. He's an attorney specializing in election law here in San Francisco. And Sheila Krumholtz, executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics in Washington. Bob Stern, what about Jim Sutton's point that all this money, all these contributions that are being given on the internet and elsewhere, that's a great thing, that's a good thing for politics because it shows that more people are engaged?
I think it's a terrific thing. I absolutely agree with that part of it. But I think what Jim would say is there's nothing wrong with somebody from the tobacco companies giving $100,000 to a candidate. There's nothing wrong with a utility company giving $500,000 to a candidate. There's nothing wrong with an oil company giving $1 million to a candidate. I think there's something wrong with that.
Well, there are strict limits on what you can give to a candidate. Are you talking about the 527s and the DNC?
No, I'm talking about, I mean, if you ask Jim, and he's right there, you can ask him. He would say no limitations on any contributions.
Jim?
I don't know that I would necessarily go that broad, and my response is I think one of the problems talking about campaign finance is it's always tinged with partisanship. Notice Bob's examples, big companies. Would he mind $500,000 from a labor union? Would Sheila mind $1 million from NOW to a female candidate? And you know, money is only bad when it's coming from places that are going to candidates that you don't necessarily agree with.
Bob Stern.
No.
Sheila Krumholtz, go ahead.
I think most people are concerned about the potential for big money to have undue influence. I don't think there is anybody out there who says, "Oh no, that money is, you know, don't worry about that. Don't worry about the suitcase full of cash in the corner." There's what's new here this cycle is I think that there's three categories of donors now. You've got those large donors giving more than $200 and sometimes up to $70,000, I guess, in the case of McCain's Joint Victory Committees, and about $33,000 max to give to the Obama Joint Victory Committees. But and hundreds of thousands or even millions more if you're going to the 527s. But there's in the federal limited contributions, there are large donors, there are small donors, which everybody agrees is great for the system. Let's get more people giving $5, $10, $50, because those people represent people who are not only giving money but are engaged and are voting and are volunteering. But now there's a new road. There's a new middle category of small donors, and I think this is especially true of the Obama campaign and arguably also true of the McCain campaign, but not proportionally as much. There's a new middle category of small donors that aggregate to big bucks. Now, they're still not representative of Joe the plumber. They're still not representative of the vast majority of Americans. Most people still can't afford to give $10, $20, $50 a month for politics.
Well,
but they do represent, I think, the good part about the small donations, because they're not invested in, you know, seeing energy policy change to benefit their personal economic interest, on the one hand. On the other hand, they are investing and providing the necessary funds to run politics. Mm-hmm. Politics aren't free, and they're not even cheap anymore.
Bob Stern, you said that you know, it's great that all these smaller donors and the huge number of people, 3 million donors to Obama, that's a good thing. But if Obama had taken the federal financing, where would that money have gone? How would those people have gotten involved?
Well, they would have gotten involved volunteering and helping.
But what if they didn't have time to volunteer?
Well, then they would not have been able to give. I don't have a problem with that. I think that the $84 million Obama would have received would have been very sufficient. He would have still had lots of volunteers, lots of people coming in buying. Apparently now he's selling yard signs. He's not even giving them away. He's selling them because people want them so badly. But people would have had yard signs. They would have gone door to door. They would have talked to their neighbors. They would have sent emails. You know, YouTube, they put on YouTube. The YouTube stuff is virtually free. We were having lots of debate, even without the money. People, of course, are very, very interested. My fear is the future, where we won't have this great outpouring of small contributions. Particularly, the candidates running for president will be going to the $2,300, it'll be $2,500 contributors, asking for large contributions, bundling large contributions from labor unions, Jim, from corporations, executives and labor union members. We're going to see a massive amount of big money coming in. That's why I think we need to reform the system to make sure that the candidates do take the public money and don't take all these private contributions, usually in large amounts.
Jim Sutton.
I mean, even Obama's contributions are, you know, there are a lot of people giving small contributions, but there are a lot of people giving big contributions as well because they want access to his administration.
Jim?
I think it's very troubling to draw assumptions about why people make contributions, as Sheila was doing earlier, talking about lobbyists and titans of industry who are giving money for the purpose of giving access. Well, I'm an attorney, okay? I'm also a professor. I'm also a father. I'm also a homeowner. I'm also on the board of nonprofits. And how I choose to describe myself on a campaign report is going to give the press and reformers kind of ideas about why I'm also a lobbyist. I oftentimes lobby across the state on campaign finance reform issues.
But you don't deny that, you know, people at the upper levels of corporations, particularly if they're in government affairs where they have regular interactions with elected officials, that they're giving a donation not only because they believe in the person, but because they do want to have their phone calls returned.
Of course. And they want to, I think also, as Ross said, they want to be part of it. Part of their job is going to events, mingling with other people. That I think mingling with the other people who go to the events could be as important, if not more important, than actually getting a call returned. And I think if you talk to those lobbyists that make those contributions and you ask them, does Governor Schwarzenegger return their phone call? Does Mayor Villaraigosa turn their phone call? I think they're going to say no.
Let me give an example, if I could. In 1984, the California Medical Association gave to every single returning legislator but one, the most conservative Republican, the most liberal Democrat. I called them up and said, why do you give to everybody but one? They said, well, first of all, who didn't we give to because we better give to that one? I said, okay, answer my question. Why did you give to all those people? They said, losers don't legislate. Most of the money that goes to legislative campaigns, which are non-competitive, most of the money that goes to local campaigns that are not competitive come from people who want something from government. Now, the presidential, I think we can say a lot of that money is coming in from people who want Obama or McCain to get elected. But at the legislative level, at the local level, you'll see developers, you'll see labor unions, and you'll see people who want something from government. And that's what I'm concerned about.
And I think that's absolutely true to make that distinction between the presidential and congressional. I think that is, there's just a lot of excitement about this presidential election, starting from the primaries on down. And so a lot of that money, I think, is ideologically motivated. These are partisans. These are people who, these are true believers, even if they're giving big money.
But there you go, making assumptions again. And I just don't see how you can make those assumptions.
Hey, I think it's great if people are giving for that reason. I think that's a good thing. My concern is the potential for people to be giving in order to have influence over, let the money have influence over policy and politics. And I think there is ample evidence for that concern. For instance, I just heard the other day somebody saying, oh, yes, we know in our industry, lobbyists will make pledges of support, but withhold their checks until the end of the session, the presumption being that they'll reward good behavior and they'll punish bad. The money is tied to politics and policy.
I need to stop you there. We're going to take a short break. We'll continue our conversation about money in politics. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Tell us if you've ever made a contribution to a political campaign and why you did that. Also, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, and we'll read your comments on the air. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this morning for Dave Iverson. And we're talking about money in politics. Campaign financing. Do you support public financing for candidates? And how the equation has changed this year with Barack Obama opting out of the system. Our guests are Bob Stern, president of the Center for Governmental Studies in Los Angeles, Jim Sutton, an attorney specializing in election law and litigation here in San Francisco, and also Sheila Krumholtz, executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics in Washington. We'll go to the phones in just a minute. Again, the phone number 866-733-6786. Jim Sutton, how do politicians view these kinds of conversations? Do they – obviously, they must know that a lot of people just think they're corrupt and taking money is strictly for to give favors out.
I think that's one point that's lost in this conversation. Now, I don't want to say that there aren't corrupt politicians, because certainly there are examples of those throughout history. But certainly the dozens of politicians that I have worked with, and I think the dozens that Bob and others have interacted with, I think would be fundamentally offended by these comments. This thought that just because a lobbyist for the insurance industry wrote them a check for $2,300 or threw them a fundraiser and raised $10,000, that they're going to turn around and then vote the way that person wants them to vote. Not only is that, I think, offensive to these people who've devoted their lives to public service, it's also wrong, and no academic study has ever shown that that happens.
Bob Stern, do you agree with that?
I agree that they're not bribing people. I agree with that. But
it's a low standard.
But why do businesses give campaign contributions? Why, Jim, why did the CMA give to every legislator, conservative and Democrat? Only one reason, and that was access. They're worried that they will lose influence with the legislators. They're not buying votes. They're buying access, and access is worth a lot of money. You get an hour of time with the legislator, that's worth a lot.
Well, number one, I don't know what is so wrong with that, because, as I say, you know, everyone has a special interest, and go to the list of registered lobbyists in Sacramento, and every single special interest on every side of every equation is represented. So it's not necessarily causing any harm to the governmental process.
But wow, I think that's an amazing statement, Jim.
But I think
that's
also
not causing any harm.
This giving access, it goes to, but the legislators, okay, they talk to the insurance company lobbyists or the pro-choice lobbyists for an hour, but I don't see the evidence of changing their vote because of their money. Their vote was probably already decided, which is probably why the money went to them in the first place, right?
CMA giving to the liberal Democrats?
You know what,
Jim, they give to both sides. These interests, other than unions, but frankly only give to Democrats, but business interests to give to both sides. And there's got to be a reason why they're giving to conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats. It's not because they want them elected.
You know what, we're going to bring our listeners in. Tom is on the line from Point Reyes. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thanks for this show. I'm somebody that does contribute. I'm a self-employed printer. I certainly don't make a lot of money, and I have no agenda from my business, but I do contribute more than $200. So I took a little bit not offense, but I felt that Sheila was really assuming a lot to think that people that contribute. I contributed, I think, $800 so far to Barack Obama, and I waited until I saw that he was the candidate before I did any contributing. I didn't contribute to either he or Hillary. Frankly, I like Obama better and voted for him in the primaries, but I would have contributed the same to Hillary, and I think I represent a lot of Democrats in the Bay Area that have a little bit of disposable money, and I can't think of a better place to put it for the future of our country and my children than to contribute it to a Democrat getting the White House.
Tom, have you given money to presidential candidates before?
Yes, and I probably gave about the same amount, maybe $600 to John Kerry, and I had less money then. and I never had before. I never had. And I think, really, you've got to – this is an unusual phenomena. Barack Obama is riding a wave of extreme disgust with what the Republicans have done to our country. And I'm a liberal to left Democrat, but I think it goes much further towards the moderate side of things. People are just absolutely fed up. And I think Hillary would have gotten the same outpouring. Maybe slightly less, but and I'm not for money in politics.
Yeah.
But I do like the fact that I can contribute something. And I don't have time to volunteer. I have to work too hard. I support my family. So
all right,
Tom, I think
thanks.
I'm typical that way.
All right.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you.
Sheila Krumholz, any reaction to Tom's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, thanks. First of all, we can never know what motivates any single contribution, of course, unless somebody comes out and says, here's why I gave. But for the presidential race in particular, I think a lot more of that money proportionally is motivated by an affiliation, an ideological connection to the candidate, their party, their ideas. I think that's great that people are giving, and if they're giving big sums, that's fine too. I'm more concerned about those people who are giving big sums and looking to trade on that favor, and particularly for the congressional money going to congressional candidates. I think it's often because there is a connection to government regulating their industries, concern about what the government is going to do to my company, my industry, my narrow interest. And there is a reaction on the other side that, you know, the politicians are also responsible for their actions. We're not talking about bribes. We're not talking about quid pro quos. If that happens, and it does,
there are laws against
jail.
That. Yeah.
People go to jail.
All right.
But the bigger concern is that money is intended to buy access and influence, and money is received, and often and sometimes they're given too much access and power because of their contribution.
All right. Let's go back to the phones now. Roy is on the line in Sacramento. Hi, Roy.
Hi. I have a simple solution for this question about influence. It is, in fact, the influence that you're trying to avoid. We could require that all donations be put in a blind trust, and that the donor cannot identify any amount that he has given to a campaign, and that any attempt to seek influence by suggesting somehow that there's an amount given could be deemed a fraud.
Interesting idea, Bob Stern. How would that work?
Well, first of all, it would dry up 90% of the money going yes. to politicians because nobody would give. But secondly, people would be a wink. You know, by the way, I put money in the blind trust for you, and people would know. The judges are not supposed to know who's giving to them, but they do because obviously there are disclosure reports and people tell them. So I think it's an intriguing idea that is not practical.
All right. Let's go now to Daly City. Angie's on the phone. Hi, Angie.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I've seen allegations on the internet that the way the Obama campaign has the small donations that foreigners can donate and have donated in significant numbers. What is the current rule? I thought there were limits on foreign donations. And what's the current rule? And is, in fact, the way it's set up make it impossible to filter out foreign donations?
Sheila Krumholz.
Well, the Obama campaign had come out and said they were being very careful about requiring that donors giving from abroad prove that they're Americans and showing a passport number. There are questions, clearly there are valid questions about potentially fraudulent contributions that have come in and they've accepted, and now the ball is in the Obama court to prove to us, to come out and show us that they are doing a careful enough job vetting the contributions, because even the small donations of $10 or $25 can add up to, in as we've seen, thousands of dollars and potentially giving far in excess of the legal limits. So there are questions. They need to be answered. We're waiting for the Obama campaign to respond.
Angie, does that respond to your question?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much.
But it is illegal, by the way, for a foreign person to give, unless they have a green card in the United States. It is illegal for foreigners to give even $1 to any campaign.
866-733-6786 is the number if you want to join our conversation. 866-733-6786. Let's go back to the phones, and Tony is on the line in Oakland. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you? This is a great conversation, by the way.
Thank you.
I was just thinking, as we talk about what the Obama campaign has done, and I'm one of Barack's finance co-chairs in Northern California, what you've been able to see is a real democratization of the campaign finance process. When you're talking about 3 million new donors, you're talking about an average donation of about $86 per person. And while I think we never want to lose sight of some of the very laudable goals of campaign finance, we may want to think that there may be a better way to go about it. And I think the technology of the internet has helped us to realize perhaps a better way to include more people in at least presidential campaign fundraising.
And, you know, what about the since you work for the Obama campaign, let me ask you about this decision he made to what many perceive to be breaking his pledge to take public financing. Why did he do that?
Well, I think we have to remember the context in which that decision was made. At the time, I think in retrospect, it's easy for us to look back and now see the great success that we've had in fundraising, primarily because we've had such success at the grassroots level. But at the time we made the decision, we were it was before the convention, and we were facing what we believed would be an onslaught of 527s. And, you know, Senator Obama was the only presidential candidate who was being very clear and unequivocal about his desire that 527s not participate in the campaign on the Democratic side. We certainly anticipated that would not be the case on the Republican side. And so, you know, given the realities of what we were facing at the time, I think it was the right decision to make.
Bob Stern, what happened to the 527s? Is it your perception that they're not as active in this cycle?
That's a very interesting question. They are active. National Rifle Association, for example, is spending $10 million. We're just not seeing it out here in California because we don't have a competitive race. But they clearly are not as active as they were in 2004. And I think a couple of reasons. One is Obama has said he does not want people to be spending money independently of him. He said that you're not welcome in the White House. And McCain has said the same thing. And McCain has been, I think, discouraging people. Also the economy. And then finally, I think the perception that there is a winner here and that Obama's going to win.
All right, Tony, thanks for the call. Let's go now to Bob in Orinda. Hey, Bob, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. First of all, for the first time in my life, and I'm in my late 50s, I've donated to a political campaign, and as have my wife and also my 21-year-old daughter, which is really amazing.
Which one?
To Obama.
Yeah.
And for a whole bunch of reasons, some that were stated earlier by another caller. But I did want to ask a question. My understanding was that part of the reason McCain ended up having to take public financing was because he had gone to a bank to get a loan when his campaign was suffering, and had, in effect, committed that he would take public financing and use it as a collateral commitment so that he'd get a loan. Is that not part of the reason why he, in effect, boxed himself into a corner and was forced to take public financing?
Bob Stern, you want to tackle that one?
As I understand it, Jim should correct me if I'm wrong, this was for the primary election, not for
yes.
the general. I think he could have made a different decision for the general.
But once he had said he would commit to public financing in the general election, he had very little choice because it could have been perceived as being illegal.
But it was done during the primary election. It was for the primary public financing, which he accepted then. And Jim, did you know in the terms of the general, did he have to accept in the general? He didn't have to accept it in the general once he accepted the primary, did he?
The law is not entirely clear, but the FEC certainly opined, and I think the better argument is that he could not, that he did, that the loan document did bind him in the general also, which goes to, of course, you know, another point, which is probably a topic of another discussion, which is how crazy and complicated the campaign finance rules have become, where, you know, running for office, you know, you don't even need one lawyer and one accountant anymore. You need a team of lawyers and a team of accountants. And even then, someone like the Obama campaign, which has gone to such great lengths with their compliance program, still evidently is making mistakes.
Jim, what are your thoughts about how this campaign today might be different if both candidates, Obama and McCain, had taken public financing?
I think it would be less exciting for the public. I think there would be far fewer people engaged in the process. I think we would have a lot less information about where the candidates stood on the issues. The candidates would not be able to go to all the places. Think how much it costs to get on a jet and fly even within one state. It's remarkable to me when I see the travel schedules of the candidates, and they can't fly alone, right? They have their families, they have their consultants, they have their staff people. That's so enormously expensive. Again, it goes back to my point that it's a great thing that there's all this money, and public financing may solve some of the perceived problems that Bob and Sheila point out about influence, but I think that the harm to the process is much greater by limiting the money.
Bob Stern, your thoughts about that?
I don't hear McCain having to cut back on his travel schedules because of the receiving the public money.
But he does have a lot fewer offices, field offices in states where he might be connecting with voters.
He does have a lot fewer. I'm not sure whether it's because what decision he's made on that. You know, and Obama has more money. I mean, let's face it, Obama has four times as much money, so clearly you're going to have more field offices. But I haven't heard McCain people say, this is terrible, we don't have enough money to get our message out. The message is getting out. In a presidential election, we hear from these candidates. There's a lot of free media. Now, it's different in congressional and in legislative races where there's no free media, and that's where money makes a big difference. I mean, frankly, in a sense, public financing is needed more at the legislative level than it is at the gubernatorial or presidential level because of all the free media.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. And again, that number to call, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org. Let's go now to Mark in San Francisco. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think the problem we're seeing here is that popular sovereignty that we're guaranteed in the Constitution has been replaced by Buckley against Vallejo dollar sovereignty. I think that Mr. Sutton really is a bit disingenuous here. He's been involved locally in San Francisco for quite some time, and he has violated the law. He was actually issued the greatest fine by the Ethics Commission about 4 or 5 years ago, and he didn't go to jail. He went ahead and bought the election for PG&E. And they're doing it again.
All right, let's. I don't know that we want to get into personal accusations here, Jim. I don't know if you want to make a quick comment. I guess we'll move on to the next call. Let's go to Jimmy in Davis. Hi, Jimmy. Jimmy, are you there? We are not getting. Okay, let's go now to Zach. Let's try Zach in San Francisco. Hi, Zach.
Yeah. Hi. Just want to say what we're seeing now is a huge difference between presidential congressional policy. And I think with Obama, it's the birth of new presidential donations. I don't necessarily think the average, maybe if we call him Joe Sixpack, donating to Obama or McCain is expecting any sort of influence. It's just showing excitement and the ability to donate with new methods. Whereas for congressional, I do see where influence could come in.
Any thoughts on that, Bob Stern?
Well, I agree with that. I mean, that's the problem, is money has a much bigger role and over influence, I think, with the legislative and congressional levels. And that's why there needs to be public financing, I think, at those levels, and strict contribution limits as well. We have very high contribution limits in California. They need to be lowered.
And, you know, how would you go about the Washington Post this week had an editorial, Bob Stern. It said, if Mr. McCain wins the presidency, he may have a motive to fix the system. If Mr. Obama wins, he will have an obligation. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Again, I think it really needs to go beyond president, though. It needs to go to Congress, and that's going to be a tough nut to crack because Congress likes it the way it is. You know, 95% of Congress members get reelected, and they're not going to want to restrict themselves anymore, I don't think. So it's going to be very tough. They might go along with fixing the presidential system since it won't affect them. That's always the problem. That's why the initiative process in California works in terms of campaign financing and other measures like redistricting, because legislators do not like to vote against their interests. And reform is against legislative interest.
All right, let's read some of our email here. We've got one from Mark in Edinburgh, Scotland, who writes, isn't the essential problem with money in politics the influence or appearance of influence? It provides wealthy donors. To the extent that Obama's money comes from lots of small donors instead of a few large ones, can we feel any more comfortable? Sheila Krumholz?
Well, let's be clear. About 30% of Obama's donors are giving $2,300 or more, the maximum amount. John McCain's level is 54%, so a far higher dependence on those donors giving the maximum amount. So these donors are still there. They're giving in record numbers and amounting to record sums. And there's still a lot of influential people seeking influence with the next administration. There are lobbyists and fundraisers working as bundlers. There are 70 Wall Street bundlers working for McCain. There are, as far as we can tell, about 56 working for Obama. He's refused to disclose his bundler's occupation employer, so it makes it difficult to tell. But there is still big money attributed to or credited to people who are seeking influence, and those people may be looking for simply a spot on the transition team or a spot in the administration. But there is still concern on all levels.
Let me read you some comments from listeners' emails from Merrick in Sacramento. In the U.S., most money is held by the top few percent, so we're not a democracy, we're a plutocracy. Paul Krugman says plutocrats are autocrats. Also, Niles writes, by and large, public financing is a joke since the Supreme Court, Buckley versus Vallejo, continues to strike down limits on contributions. The money continues to game the system as long as big money can contribute to 527s or the equivalent, inaugural parties and the political parties. Public financing does not serve democratization of money. And Eric in Palo Alto writes, why are your guests continuing to say that the small donors aren't invested in the election? The American people are extremely invested in the politics that are being debated. Healthcare, taxes, the environment, energy policy, all these things are what have mobilized the grassroots donors. These issues affect the people of America. It's a way that we get to have our influence. Bob Stern, you don't really disagree with that, do you, or do you?
Well, it's a way to get influence, but let me tell you...
It's a different kind of influence.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Jim mentions that everybody's represented in Sacramento, but not everybody's represented with money, and not everybody's giving campaign contributions in Sacramento. Certainly, the consumer rights people are not giving campaign contributions to the same extent that the business people are. So while everybody may have a lobbyist, not everybody has a lobbyist who's giving campaign money, and campaign money counts. Why do businesses make campaign contributions? It's a business decision because they know they will get a good return on their money.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. Steve is on the line in Glen Ellen. Hi, Steve.
Oh, hi. So the question I got is, why would anybody want to use public money to pay for the ads and the kind of material that's getting mailed out? I mean, it seems like it's all lies and, you know, and whatnot. And so why would we want to pay for that?
Well,
as the public with tax money.
Yeah, Jim Sutton, people don't really get to choose how their money gets spent.
Right. One person's lies or another person's truth, right? And certainly in this room on this show, no one could deny that getting more information to the voters, you know, whether that information is spun by one side or the other, you know, that should be the goal, right?
All right. Sheila Krumholz, do you folks at the Center for Responsive Politics, you don't necessarily evaluate any of the ways in which the money is spent, right? You're just tracking it, where it's coming from?
Oh, no, we do. We also do track how the money is spent. And for the presidential campaign, at this point in the cycle, it's largely being spent on media, on reaching out to the voters, and particularly on broadcast media. Earlier in the cycle, during the primary campaign, it's more on overhead and administration and salaries, getting the organization set up.
The infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Can you have a sense of the percentage of money that's going for media right now? I would think it would be huge.
Pull that up, and I can tell you can see on for yourselves on opensecrets.org by going to the presidential section and clicking on expenditures. And if you do that, you'll see for the media about the largest category is $335 million so far spent on broadcast media. The second highest category is salaries and benefits, $152 million. But we've broken it down for campaign expenses, how much is going to transfers, you know, contributions, et cetera.
So when we hear talk about Bob Stern, as we did this week, Sarah Palin's wardrobe and money that the RNC paid for that, small change, kind of a distraction small, you know, not very much money in the context of what we're discussing here today?
Well,
interesting.
Yeah, I don't think many people would say $150,000 is small change.
Well, not for, certainly for clothes, but in terms of the overall budgets of these campaigns. But is it worth talking about, Sheila Krumholz? What does it tell us?
Oh, I think people care because they want to make sure that their campaign contributions and that their campaign contributions are being used wisely, and they're also judging how the candidates are husbanding their resources because they expect it's a reflection of how they'll husband the resources of the country.
Jim Sutton, you're shaking your head.
You know, I this morning tried to figure out what the response is to the $150,000 on the wardrobe. I don't think there's a way to defend it. I also, to be very frank, I wonder on the accuracy of the report and what was it really spent on, because remember that most of the people that are publicizing that story are partisans against McCain.
All right, let's try to get another call in here. Bob is on the line in Brisbane. I assume Brisbane, California, not Australia. Bob, welcome to the show. Hi.
Well, I'm sort of irritated about all this money is good. You know, I gave money this year to Obama before I found out that he actually had most of the money. And I don't feel good about candidates. Whoever has the most money wins, you know. And this year I said, like, well, okay, it's our turn. You know, last time Bush had all the money, so he won. Reagan started it with back in, you know, in the 80s. What I would like to see is all these people whose their job is the marketing of candidates, is those people just eliminate the whole campaign industry. And let's just get down to the candidates and take all the money and all the marketing, because marketing is lying. That's propaganda. So I just think that we should have a system where the media has to donate time, candidates have to sit in front of a television screen and just talk.
All right. Let me just let me ask Bob Stern about your assumption there that whoever has the most money wins. How often is that the case, Bob? Do you know?
Generally, it is the case, particularly in legislative and congressional races.
But if I might say one thing, but why do people oftentimes have a lot of money? Because they're really popular. So they
or is it that they're incumbents?
Sometimes it's that also. But, you know, Mayor Newsom was able to raise $5 million when he was not an incumbent because he was very popular and there's a groundswell of support. So, yes, you can say in that race that the person with the most money won, but also money is a reflection of support. What's everyone saying about Barack Obama? The amount of money he's getting is a reflection of this groundswell of support. So when the conclusion is, if he wins, that the man with the most money wins, it's not necessarily because of the money.
Bob Stern, anything to add to that?
I would agree it's not necessarily because of the money, but generally the person who has the most money has the biggest advantage and wins. And generally the incumbents have the most money because contributors do not want to alienate the incumbents in power.
Do you expect anything to change, Bob Stern, in the next 4 years?
Yes, I think that there may be an initiative in California lowering contribution limits. There's certainly going to be a measure on the ballot to repeal the ban on public financing that was passed by the legislature, signed by the governor, be on the ballot June 2010, and that will be for a Secretary of State race in public financing. We're seeing throughout the country states and local communities adopting tougher laws and also public financing laws.
All right. Thanks so much. Bob Stern, president of the Center for Governmental Studies in Los Angeles. Thanks to you. Thanks also to Jim Sutton and Sheila Krumholtz from the Center for Responsive Politics and to Roz Wyman earlier in the hour. And for more coverage of the presidential election, tune in to This Week in Northern California on KQED Television. That's tonight at 7:30. I'm Scott Schaefer. In our next hour, we'll be talking about bipartisan couples. What happens when one person's a Democrat and one's a Republican? Jim Sutton's raising his hand. Maybe we should have you stick around. But stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.